And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, coming your way Mondays at 1 a.m., Sundays 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., archiving the podcasts at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also link to our guest's website. We'll give that to you shortly. Also want you to stay tuned. I think you're going to enjoy this program. We've been dealing with a lot of this, which I'm very excited about, especially when it comes to how this influences our lives from day to day. This is Tell Me Your Story, and I think you're going to enjoy today's program. Stay tuned. Tell Me Your Story. That is Tears for Inanna and Kalyani. I want to welcome you to our program. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me here.
Beautiful. First of all, I'm going to get some preliminaries out of the way. The origins and meaning of your name?
Good question. I imagine it is, from what I looked, it is Indian.
Okay. And Inanna, tell us about where that comes from.
Inanna is a myth or a goddess that I happen to find out about, connect with, that was from Sumerian times, very ancient civilization. They say that's where we came from, the location of the birth of our civilization, because of the longest oldest known written text came from. So it's a Sumerian goddess who is an archetype, a very unique, very strong feminine archetypal symbol that I think, you know, just it really ties into where we're moving as a new consciousness, because she's the embodiment of a woman that's fully integrated in all her aspects and dimensions, and it's also a very divine. So it's very holographic. She's involved in history, in creation. She's sovereign. She's divine. She's powerful. She's free, and she's respected, deeply respected. She's actually one of the oldest known and longest venerated goddesses of all time. And her name changed throughout history. By Babylonian times, she was known as Ishtar. And there's a lot of, different interpretations of her history or myth. And I just became really fascinated at the time when I stumbled upon it, and something moved me very deeply. I actually was fascinated with this whole entire part of our history. And that's where my music first initially came from, including my first track.
Now, you say where we come from, and
in this civilization, the myths attached to it.
And there are those who speculate, maybe there is evidence to verify the fact that human beings have actually gone through five cycles of birth and death. We for some reason, make the mistakes that we make and nearly wipe ourselves out and almost have to start over again. And there are those who think that we're on the brink of that again. So are you talking about the whole of civilization, of humanity, as long as man has existed, regardless of these five, shall we say, cycles I'll just use the terms birth and death that people talk about?
No, I'm not talking in terms of all of humanity's, birth and death or renaissance, but I guess they are intricately connected. It could be that this is just, and I believe, just like you said, that even without having any proof, but that we may have had many of these renaissances throughout our existence here on this planet. And mm-hmm. maybe the Sumerian was another renaissance. Some interpret Inanna to be a star seed, like she came from a different star, and she came with, not alone, with a group of beings, and some have interpreted as her being one of the four primary divinities that created humanity as we know it today and civilized us. And this is, we're talking, if you go back to the Enuma Elis tablets, you know, the oldest one that we have put our hands in, has even reliefs of our solar system on it. And, like, it's 3000 BC, I believe the oldest one. There are different versions. And the Enuma Elis tablets, they're the oldest, one of the oldest known forms of writing, and it's depicting the creationary myth of Sumeria, which is the birth of our civilization. In that creationary myth, in the oldest Enuma Elis tablets, God was a female, quote unquote, like a feminine presence, a mm-hmm. feminine deity, has created the world and all beings and all things underneath it. So, what really was fascinating to me was that we have lived in the last at least 6,000 years that we know under a more archetypically masculine divinity. So the archetype of God is male. Ultimately, I believe consciousness doesn't have gender, but it's still fascinating to be able to look at new possibilities and the beauty of this renaissance of, I'm pretty sure you must be aware, Richard, that, you know, I know you're very broad and you have navigated so many different aspects of consciousness that, you know, there is incredible movement towards the renaissance of the sacred feminine in the planet, the liberation of women, and also the cultivation of the qualities, not only within women, because we've lost, a lot of us have lost touch with what it is that it is beautiful about being feminine. We were only told that it was not relevant for the context of history we're living in, that those things are not valuable, which is nurturance, which is love, which is intuitiveness, which is the dark side, which they say, which is hidden, which is not science, which is nature, which is not logical, but coming from different senses that we have not, that go beyond our five senses. You know, when we say dark, we tend to associate with something negative, not negative, but hidden. That which is hidden from our physical sight does not mean it's negative. It's just beyond our comprehension from a perspective of the tools we have to play with, which is our brain and our five senses. Mm-hmm. What is beyond that is feminine, which I think is beautiful. And we've just like Einstein said, you know, the mind is supposed to serve us, not rule over us, because we're much bigger than just the mind. Mm-hmm. The mind is a tool,
yeah,
just like how all our other senses are assisting us. So I think it's Inanna fits in perfectly, and the myth she comes from, which my first track, Namu's Invocation, was about this creationary myth, and Inanna is an offspring of Namu. It's like, you know, one of the children, one of the first to step in, and so I just allow this energy, this thing that moved and created such what I call a fire in my belly to speak through, and I couldn't find words. So it was just these amazing, beautiful, profound sounds that became what they became.
I think those three words sort of adequately describe the music that we just heard, and we're going to hear more of that later on in the program. I grew up in a family that was more matriarchal, five women and three men, my mother and four sisters, my father and my brother and myself.
Wow.
And I also noticed that on my mother's side of the family, relatives, in reference to the relatives, that in spite of the fact that, yes, the men were very much involved in outdoor activities, my mother's side of the family was very much into, for example, the rodeo and Western outdoor horse riding and this kind of thing, ranching, farming. It seemed that, from my observations, even as a child, the women ran the place. Whether I was at my grandmother's house, whether I was at my aunt's house, it didn't matter. That seemed to be the case. And it was normal. It wasn't, gee, I don't like this. This is, we should be in charge here, you know, because look at the rest of our archetypes in other institutions throughout our lives. It just was the way it was. And quite honestly, over the years, as I've learned more and I've experienced more, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I'd much rather live under a matriarchal society than the patriarchal society that's gotten us into the mess that we're in. However, I would think you would probably agree that though, using the analogy of a pendulum, swinging back and forth, there has to come a point at which we reach some kind of equilibrium or balance between the two, so that I think you used quite well the concept of darkness, because nobody ever refers to the shadow of the earth covering the moon during a new moon as evil, as bad. It's dark, but you can't have darkness without light, and that's called shadow. But that's not doesn't make it evil or wrong or bad or whatever other negatives you want to throw on it. It just is. So it seems to me that we need to come to eventually, I hope, because it seems right now, and maybe rightly so, that yes, this whole aspect of the sacred feminine, that pendulum is swinging in that direction, especially with what's going on in our society today. Time is up movement and so forth. And then I'm also hearing from men who are actually scared out of their minds.
Really?
It's like, I don't want to go near the opposite sex because every single move I make, every word I say, every flutter of the eyebrow or eyelash could be misconstrued, and I could lose my job, my life, everything could go right down the toilet. I mean, that's how unfortunately that's the backlash.
When
we're talking about the sacred feminine, go ahead and elaborate on that in this context here.
Well, I think you pointed to something extremely important, which is the integration of the sacred masculine, which we have to... We're in a period... Our newer generation is actually revisiting what the sacred masculine is, because we have a hand-me-down idea, which is... primarily regulated, has been regulated and enforced by violence and force. We cannot forget our days of, Holy Inquisition. If you come from a Christian, I'm not going to assume we do, but we've had more holy wars than we could appreciate in any context.
Oh, yeah.
And those were violent, and they're everything that love is not. So we come from a confused state, a state in which we were given contradictory imagery and thoughts and ideas to live by as being part of God's nature. So we've lived in a confused state of incoherency. And our minds, our human minds, in my perception, has been diseased. We're really ill. We're ill mentally. And it's not just men, it's men, women, it's all of us. It is global. It's a community. We're trying to re-evaluate and understand who we are at this point. It's a transitional period because there's too many forces at play still. There's still a lot of conditioning that exists. There's still a lot of fear that was imposed on us, and a lot of it, unfortunately, was religiously imposed. This fear of a God that's very punitive and vindictive and whatever that is, has all these characteristics that are very dark, and they're not characteristics of true consciousness that we understand today, being the equalizer, the compassion, the ultimate loving force that it wants to embrace and include, not make something wrong and right, but just realize that we're free beings, that we have choice, and that there is, a consequence to every choice. It's a God that gives us freedom and forgiveness, instead of placing us against each other or enslaving us in service to one another. you know, I feel that men, especially older generation, is still, and even the youngest, is still trying to understand who they are. And I think it's profound to go within and separate who you truly are from the condition you've received. And where there's fear, why is there fear? What am I afraid of? And women have come from an abusive situation, a restrictive, limited scope of action. As you said, you thought the women in your family were running the show, but they're running the show within the scope of the home. Maybe the small reach right outside of the home, maybe if you had a family business. But on the scope of the world, you look outside, and it's definitely clear we were kept from learning. We were kept from being educated. You look globally, that's still happening in many cultures.
Mm-hmm.
We were restricted to the scope of the home and procreation and caring for children, while man's home was the world, and he could attempt to do it. And there was nothing wrong with whatever men chose to do. But men and the women were forbidden to touch a lot of things and aspects of our reality and limited. Thank God for the gift of genes, because that didn't make a difference in our evolution, because as we're always blending, you know, the feminine gene and masculine gene, we're creating new beings with just the same elements of evolution. And we are still evolving, but we're limited. So now, with the access to and the victories that were won towards women's freedom, and the less the influence of the church and other elements of religion, the more women were able to emancipate themselves. Not easily achieved. You know, there was a lot of cost to it throughout history. But now women are also trying to learn the value of being feminine and integrating that femininity back, because we had to wear pants in that process, quote-unquote pants,
mm-hmm.
because it was a masculine world. So to gain space, we had to learn to act in the world in ways that the world was being regulated, you know, and I, as a child, you know, of a single mother who my father wasn't around, you know, she had, you know, she was separated when I was three from my dad. And she tried to get jobs, and every time, several interviews, she was a very beautiful young woman. She was only 27 when she was divorced, because she got married at 17, just short of 18.
Mm.
And she would come for an interview, and whenever they say, "What's your marital status?" and she would say, "I am divorced," they would say, "Yay." I mean, literally, my mother would blush, get up, and walk away.
Mm.
And so many times she was working, and she would be so harassed by the man or the boss that she would have to quit. And we're talking 70s here in Brazil.
Mm.
And 80s. I mean, even it got better, but not a lot. And to not be able to survive, feel like you're alone, you're uneducated, and every time you get a paying job, you have to sleep with somebody, or somebody feels they're entitled to take you to bed because they pay your salary. And this happened to her over and over again. She had to keep changing jobs. This is a reality that we couldn't even speak about because there was nobody willing to listen. So if men are struggling now, just take a minute and step in our shoes and what women have had to endure, and have compassion. And yes, it is difficult for everybody now, for everyone. So we're all trying to re-understand and re-examine and re-establish our roles towards one another. And again, swinging the pendulum. In swinging the pendulum, I think women are, and men, but especially women, as we come into power, we have to come into power, sovereignty, and freedom with a lot of responsibility. Our job will be to gain that without losing sight of the harmony we're now trying to create, the balance, and not, you know, I think it's impossible to really swing the pendulum all the way back, knowing all that we know. You know, I think we need, if we don't self-destruct, if we don't kill the planet in the process of the dominion of nature that we've been in, and brain sovereignty, logic sovereignty, and science sovereignty, and the disregard to nature, if we survive, I think we will know enough by looking back and realizing where we need to go, where it's about equality, integration, love, harmony. It's about living at peace and sharing, protecting our resources, about not being closed off to new possibilities in the sense of how we exercise our senses as well. There's so much more to us than our five senses. Are we open to exploring that, you know, and learning more about another side of our nature that we've ignored, and becoming more integrated as masculine and feminine.
Let's talk a little bit about music. And not only, well, we'll start with how it has changed your life since you began to create this beautiful music. Talk to us about your beginnings musically.
Well, I wasn't trained musically. I never thought I would be singing. That wasn't something I dreamt of or pursued. It came very suddenly. I was always in a very deep inquiry about God and the reality of spirit, and since I was a young child growing up in Brazil, and I think my music is more a byproduct of my spiritual nature than it is just a product of the joy of singing or the desire to sing in the sense of being a performing artist. I'm actually a little stage shy. I don't really like to label myself in any way. I am just an instrument to whatever spirit wants me to do at every moment. So I like calling myself a spiritually inspired visionary instead of a producer or a writer or a singer, because I navigate between different creative avenues that just, I like them all equally. And I also facilitate circles for the spiritual circles. I'm a counselor. I have a master's in spiritual psychology. And it's very interesting because we're used to, you know, as a society, to attach a label to someone as to what they do, right? And then we can put them in a box and comprehend who they are, and it makes it easier for us. But it also limits our scope. Once you place yourself as somebody who does just this one thing, you're not going to be open to all aspects of you being available or accessible, because you become smaller and smaller. Like, I don't know if you understand where I'm going. So my music is just one aspect of me, and I do feel it is inherently, it was birthed from a spiritual place within me. Not just a desire to sing. I'm sorry, I have a little bit of an allergy going or a little bit of a cold.
No problem, no problem.
But I don't know if you understand what I'm saying. Just
I do.
The music came after I had been through such a spiritual journey all my life. Came late in life, and I was already doing conscious media, and it came as a result of my spiritual practice, and also stumbling across as I studied deeply, as I was in a development phase of preparing to produce a documentary on the Divine Feminine. So you see how this is all intricately connected.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my purpose, I feel, is very much I've been called to step into this rebirthing as a steward or a midwife to the rebirthing of the Divine Feminine, the Sacred Feminine, and the consciousness of our global community. Not because I believe we're going to replace the divine masculine concept of reality, but because without strengthening the feminine, we cannot integrate it with the masculine. So women are still suffering from cellular memory of the fear imposed on them. There's a lot of fear in women, and there's a lot of smallness, you know, and there's very few avenues that we could explore spiritually because most religions close their doors to our accessing the highest point. You know, women could not be priest spirit, let's just say that, you know, and women could not be rabbis either. And there's been reform, and some smaller sects now are accepting women rabbis.
Mm-hmm.
Still a small sect of our and Christian, you know, the Christian, you know, aspect of our spirituality also has so many new avenues that now women are about can access and explore. But this is also very, very new.
Yeah.
Women's education has only happened. I mean, women started going to universities in on the free country, United States. What was it, 50s? Women started voting in the 20s. So we're talking, I mean, yesterday.
Yeah, not even 100 years.
Of humanity. So
it's interesting, too, I find fascinating, and I attribute this to a mistake, on the one hand, made by the males at the time. Their ego got so involved and in the way of what they were wanting to accomplish and stay in control, that they inadvertently left into the text of the New Testament evidence that women were at the forefront of that philosophy, because the very first person to see and acknowledge who the Christ was after his crucifixion and resurrection was Mary Magdalene. It wasn't Peter or Paul or James or John or any of the other guys. It was a woman. And I sit here going, yeah, that makes a lot more sense, because women in that time, let alone today, and that's why I think if Jesus were to literally return today in physical form, most men wouldn't recognize him. That would probably crucify him again for making such claims, such blasphemous and outlandish claims of who he was, let alone if he came back as a she. Even more so. And I do find this all very fascinating. And I have to say, too, that when I was meeting women in my 20s and 30s and even into my 40s, I became very, very frustrated at the level of damage that many of these women that I came in contact with had. And I became very angry and even resentful to the men who had done this. Most of the time it was men. To the extent that I almost became ashamed to be a man, to be a male of the species. This is what we're doing to the others, to the other side, to the
That's
other half of us.
Richard. That's really beautiful.
It's like unbelievable. You know, and I, if I have ever wronged anybody, male or female for that matter, but in this context, females in any way, shape or form, my God, my heartfelt apologies. Because a lot of times I think some of these things happen and it's just innocent and you don't realize what you're doing because you get caught up in the moment. You know, there are situations where you'll make a move, the person says no, and then you back off and it's over and it's done. But in this culture in which we live today, you look back on that and go, could that come back and haunt me? Could that person come back and accuse me of, you know, some form of inappropriate behavior when I stopped? I didn't do anything, you know, in that respect, you know. Misread the signs, you know, was too eager, was too much emotionally or hormonally in the moment in the 20s and 30s and so forth. Mm-hmm. I know that with what you're talking about musically, we want to talk more about as we continue here on the program. And I want to also have our listeners listen to, it is pronounced Manus, Manus Invocation. We're going to come back.
Namu.
With Namu an N, not an M. Namu. I reversed the letters there.
Yeah.
Namu's Invocation. We're going to come back and we're going to listen to that. We're talking with Kaliani, and you are from Brazil, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And yet you reside here in the States these days, or do you spend most of your time
in California?
Okay, so you're not far from us. We're here on the Central Coast. And we are going to come back, and we're going to listen to Namu's Invocation. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay with us.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're going to listen to Namu's Invocation. Stay tuned. Kalyani and Namu's Invocation. And I also have to say, too, Kalyani, that the video, I encourage people to go to your website, kalyani.com, to watch the videos. The imagery is it's just incredible. I'm blown away by all of that. It's wonderful to see. I think people need to go to the website and see what happens. And we'll be linked to your website as well, so people can go there directly, get more information, find out more. Tell me about. I'm curious as to obviously these two pieces of music we featured here on the program. Wonderful. I'm curious as to, for example, as the term goes, how many albums you've put out and so forth. And I'm curious also, as you've created this music in studio, it seems to me that's pretty much where this is being done. How do you prepare to create each one of these pieces? I don't want to say perform, but because you're really creating something quite extraordinary for people to listen to and to really get into.
Oh, yeah, that is like trying to explain why the sky is blue. It's the hardest question. First, it's a very... it's a beautiful process. It comes from this place of inspiration. I feel that Namu's Invocation and Tears for Nana particularly are two very complex and very divinely infused pieces. And they came from a process of surrendering to this place within me that felt all the pain of the feminine and all the glory and the beauty of the sacred feminine at the same time. And as I stumbled upon this myth, how I couldn't even express. So in those particular cases, okay, I don't know what else will be coming through and what the point of inspiration will be, but given that my music is initially being sourced from that, I feel like, first of all, I want to say I'm a singled artist. I don't have any attachment to anything being done as typical singers do. I don't have an attachment to the success of it either, except that I would love the message. If it is a message that helps, that touches, that transforms, yes, I would like it to be seen. But to say that I have an attachment to a career as a singer, I don't, which gives me a lot of freedom. So to answer your question about albums, I do not intend to create an album unless I create 8 pieces that I, or 9 pieces, or 10, or 11, or 12, or 18, I don't know. And at the end of creating each one of them individually, and I will put them in an album and say, oh, here's an album. I create from a place of, you know, in the moment, and it is connected to a specific thread, as you can see, and I am allowing it to come through authentically, not because I feel I have to produce something or because I want to go and perform and I want to tour. This is not my driving force, just to clarify. So I would say I'm an unusual artist in that sense, because if I have 2 more singles, 3 more singles, and that's all I create all my life as a musical artist, then so be it. I don't know what is going to be. I don't know what's going to turn out to be. And I don't want to plan or place it in a box again. It's the whole idea that I want to continue to allow spirit to speak through me in whatever form, or my soul to be be expressed in whatever form, and I consider allowing our soul speaking through us to be spirit speaking through us, because when we're connected deeply to our soul, we're connected to spirit. So I feel to just continue to not put my head ahead of the game and allow my heart, my soul, the spirit in me to be the leading force, not allow my ego to drive, you know, but be on the back seat. Or, you know, just we can't live without an ego because we're in the body. And the ego has a purpose as well. I believe it serves us as well. And, but, you know, just it's a dance to learn to dance to the rhythm, you know, without falling too much while we're trying to allow our soul to lead us and not be afraid. So we have to let go of concepts, and something I'm very much into. It's not being driven by concepts and ideas about things, but allowing your soul to speak in every moment, regardless if it fits or doesn't fit. And whenever your ego is screaming, you just say, okay, I'm hearing you. Just, you know, take it easy. I'm still going to allow my soul to speak and trust that it knows a lot better than my ego or my brain thinks it does, you know? Because every time I know I made that choice, what came out was so much bigger and beautiful than I could have envisioned or imagined with my mind, that I've learned to kind of surrender more to this unknown, you know. Oh, it doesn't have a model. Oh, you don't fit in, you know. It doesn't really matter anymore to me because I've made enough choices in my life where I can trust, you know, that if I'm in this place, where it's coming from this soulful, almost innocent, pure part of me, that what is going to be delivered is going to be a lot more beautiful, a lot more magical. You know, it's going to do things that I never thought possible. And it's going to open doors that I even didn't think I was meant to walk through. Or, you know, it's just we have to allow, in my perception, as we move towards a more spiritual existence, to take chance in trusting, you know, trusting the wisdom that lives inside of us instead of always looking outside for permission, for the seal of approval, be it, you know, politically or religiously or, you know, or even scientifically. Sometimes, of course, we can't just, you know, say we're a doctor now and I've got, you know, treat people. We have to be very careful how we step into that. But as far as things that are personal and in our world, at least we can gain sovereignty over that and make personal choices where we can trust more the wisdom that is living inside of us if we're coming from, you know, a pure, authentic place in our soul that wants to do something a certain way. Yeah. And if we feel pressured from a concept or a form or a way of doing things that is from the outside, from the world, from in training, from whatever form of conditioning we had culturally or historically, or we just look at it and see, am I that person? Or am I doing it because I'm feeling pressured from the world? And who really am I? We're at this point where we're having to create new models. And that's why talking about new myths that haven't been explored is so on point. I mean, I cannot imagine the timeliness of Tears for Inanna when you're talking about, you know, a sovereign woman, a sovereign goddess that was so incredibly powerful, at the inception of our civilization, you know?
Yeah. I've been watching some series and movies focusing primarily on the queens of the British crown over the last, I'm going to say, 200 years up to the present. And I find it fascinating that here we have a monarchy that is basically, in, again, the last 100 to 200 years, been run by a woman. And that if the, I'd like to think that some of the information that's being shared within these programs is fairly accurate, how much the men struggled to try to get the queen to conform to the way in which things are supposed to be done. And she says no. And she stands her ground and does what she wants, but not in a ruthless and vindictive and revengeful and or dictatorial way, but in a way that says, that may be the way you used to do things, but that's not the way we're going to do them now. And I find that I know that there are other countries where they have female rulers. They have, you know, female presidents, if you will, or head of state, if you will. And granted, the United States is still a very young country by comparison to many of these countries. I really do sometimes wonder what it would be like if we had a female president in that regard and how much different things might be. And I'm not even going to our last political cycle. I'm just saying somewhere down the road here, it just seems like the natural course of events based upon what's happening in this country and yet alone around the world. And so I'm curious about the sacred feminine as you are sharing this and helping folks to shall we say, transition or incorporate that into their lives. What kinds of manifestations, if you will, of change have you seen as you share this particular message of the sacred feminine with people, both through your talks and or presentations, as well as through your music?
What transformations I have already seen?
Mm-hmm.
You mean in the culture in general, or in a certain aspect of it, or politically?
I'd say in the culture in general, but in terms of your own experiences, as you have over the years shared this, I'll just say shared this message about the sacred feminine. How has this been taken by the people that you come in contact with? And I know that, you know, we draw to us the people that are going to hear the message. I get that. But at the same time, there's always that room for the growth and the expansion, the raising of the consciousness. Mm-hmm. And are you seeing that? Beginning? Is it more than just a beginning, or are we literally just beginning step one of 100 steps? Or maybe we're step 5 or step 10?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think that's our mind trying to get a scope of the universe. Mm-hmm. If you look at the universe, how really is it big? How many galaxies are in it? I mean, how bigger can it be? Is are we 1% or 2% or 10, 20? The stuff that we can see with our eyes, what
right.
part of it? You know, again, you can look at this evolution from so many different lenses, but if we look back, you know, to, let's say, you know, the 1800s, you know, you can look back to 2,000 years ago, you can look back, you know, to 500 years ago. And, of course, it's been, we had leaders in people who were crucified in the process of trying to create change. You know, and I believe that Jesus was one of them, historically speaking, even outside of the context of spirituality or religion. Jesus was just standing against what was trying to be implemented. He did not agree. and he died in the process of standing for what he believes in very courageously. It's very hard to say where are we in reference to where we're going, because we haven't gotten, there is no finality. What is the end result to say complete equality? If we're talking about complete equality, we still have quite a bit of ways to go. If we can live in a world that's just, you know, and when we say just in the sense of masculine and feminine, I think when we get there, hopefully the world will be just in all other ways, where there will be, children won't suffer, that there will be no hunger, that nature won't be, that there will be laws protecting nature, more strict laws that protect nature as opposed to protecting only corporations. You know, right now we live in a world that protects the generation of money. And if we don't wake up to the fact that we continue to protect the generation of money, we'll stop existing. We'll cease to exist. And you, like you said, it's another cycle of nature where we self-destroyed, maybe another cycle of humankind where we self-destroyed and came out again from the remains of our genetic leftovers. You know, whatever was left of us under caves or underground, from diluvians, from whatever we've gone through before and survived, and here we are again facing the precipice because we just continue to separate ourselves from nature when we are a product of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that is not nature.
Yeah.
The elements we play in science with came from nature. We didn't create the atoms ourselves. So there's such an arrogance in humankind when it comes from the scientific point that to me is very funny. It's funny because the whole idea of heaven and earth even is funny, because looking to a God that's out there in heaven, you know, in the firmament or whatever, the you know, it's there and not here. And if you take a step back and imagine yourself flying over, just like we've seen these images of our probes going into outer space, and you go as far back as you can, you are going to see that we're smack in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
The earth is in the cosmos. There is no there.
Yeah.
We are there.
We are there.
Well, you know, it's and this very interesting mental trap that we have lived in that has created separation. Again, are we grown up enough now to see that we are not separate in any way?
Yeah.
That we are part of nature, that there's nothing to conquer.
Yeah.
When you conquer nature, you conquer yourself.
That's true. I've always felt that nature was the greatest teacher. If we would just listen and follow the lessons that she's teaching us, we would be much farther along. You know, it's also interesting, too, that you have there's an aspect of our life and existence that intrigues you that I was reading about. It's for me anyway, it's best epitomized by a passage from one of the Gospels having to do with death. And it is stated in the Bible that it is appointed to man once to die and then the judgment. Now, forget about the judgment part. It says that he's appointed every man once to die. Well, but in the New Testament, in the Gospels, it's stated that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. So that means that Lazarus died once, was raised from the dead, and probably died a second time. I mean, we must assume that he was mortal. So wait a minute, where's the rule? Well, what I'm leading to is the fact that you like paradoxes, those things that are difficult to wrap one's brain around because it seems like it's a contradiction in terminology. I think it's just a lack of understanding of what the terms mean. Talk to us about your, I don't know if the right word is, your love for or of paradoxes, or your view of paradoxes as teachers.
Yeah, this is a beautiful, beautiful question, and it's very, I don't feel like I have an answer to the, like a formula to solve every paradox.
No, we're not asking for solutions here, but they obviously intrigue you. They intrigue me too, because for me, it shows, again, that it continues to show sort of the arrogance of man, because
yes,
he wants to have things both ways.
Yes, it shows us how we are so conditioned to taking sides, mm-hmm. making things right and wrong, taking labels, being comfortable in the box. And paradoxes force you to, they astound you sometimes, because two things, what I believe what they point us to is the places in us that are not natural. They're part of a conditioning, and they bust the conditioning. The beauty of those paradoxes is because they give us those ha-ha moments. And that's why they fascinate me. How can silence and music be so hand in hand? And I wasn't even, aware that others have written about this when I felt that,
mm-hmm.
But, other philosophers have contemplated in that. How can sounds be so close to silence, certain sounds,
Yeah. I've heard it said, too, that it's the space between the notes that makes music what it is.
Yeah.
Someone asked me, and this is back when I was in my 20s, we were driving in a van, and they asked me to sing a song, and so I did, and I kind of linked everything together. And they liked what I had done, but they said, you need to leave some spaces in there. It's okay to have space. You don't have to have sound in every microsecond of the piece, that there's nothing wrong with having silence just every so often. So, yeah, and you love silence. And I would venture that, as endangered species goes, that's probably one of those things that you find the hardest to find, especially if you're in California, unless you can find a place, maybe under the sea, you might be able to find silence. I'm not sure if you can find it above the waterline.
Well, that's why I love Sundays. It's my favorite day of the week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love Sundays because, usually Sundays, have you ever walked on a Sunday morning, very early in the morning? It looks like the world is the most beautiful place, that we have just a fraction of the population that we do. There are hardly any cars on the street.
Yeah.
You don't have gardeners, blowing machines, you hardly have any cars.
Mm.
The feeling of just being in a place that's not overly inhabited, population, where there's no competition for space and pollution and noise. It's a place where, I dream, we can come back to. I really believe the world is overpopulated. And overpopulation serves corporations because, that the more slaves are there to the system, and the least comfortable will be, the less time we'll have to think about how we are living, because we're just thinking about surviving.
Yeah.
It's the rat wheel. So we have to start thinking about... I'm afraid if I continue to talk like that, I'll be executed.
No. Not here. I guarantee you.
No, not here.
I tend to agree with most everything you're talking about, because what we try to promote here on this program is not survival. I've sort of created a new word here, survival. We want to thrive.
Thrive.
We want enough of the consumer producer. And yes, we have to have food and shelter and clothing and all those kinds of things. But... not at the expense of the ability to enjoy and truly experience. For example, to truly sit and experience silence somewhere, you know, and this is what we really try to promote. And that's why we're looking for those new ways of living, because the old ways, they don't work. Just look around. They're just not working. And I find, too, that it's interesting, as I was listening to your two pieces of music, that even though there is sound throughout the entire wave, I can not only hear it, but I can visually, I can see it. There's almost that aspect, if you will. It's kind of, again, one of those paradoxes. There's an aspect of silence within the context of the music, or if nothing more, a quieting. And that can go a long way as well to help us to make it through from one day to the next, especially for some of us folks who've been through some pretty horrific December and January experiences here on the Central Coast. My God, how do you calm down and find that quiet space and realize that, hey, if you're still alive, everything's okay, and it's going to be, and life does go on, and so forth and so on. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect, if not silence, but at least of finding that quiet space within?
Yeah, wow, there's so much that can be said of that. And I think this is the place in us that we have been least allowed to go into because of the noise that has been created. And not that I am saying that it was done on purpose, regardless if it was on purpose or not, but it's creating so much interference. And how important it is to really be able to access the silence. The silence is freedom. It is freedom from having to. It's freedom from conditioning, from having to do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing to keep the wheel turning. And one thing is directly connected to the other. I think looking for aspects of our lives that we can continue to simplify and simplify and simplify will continually increase our opportunities to go within and be in emptiness and be in quietness enough to listen to our own soul speak to us. And the revelations can be many, can be, you know, infinite, because when you're connecting to your soul, the universe of new knowledge is available, and it's inherently going to give you what you will need in that moment, which can be very different from individual to individual. So cultivation of silence is not being quiet necessarily in the body. You can actually be active in the body and being complete silence within. The silence and the quietness we speak of is within the mind. You know, we could be very quiet sitting in front of our computers. There's no part of our bodies moving, but our minds are running 1,000 miles an hour, right? So the experience of having a mind that does not have to race, that does not have cues, that doesn't feel rushed, is such a privilege these days. And it's from this place that we actually can hear the wisdom voice that lives within us, that is connected to, if you want to say, consciousness or higher intelligence, you know, your higher self. So there's so much wisdom to be harvested from that place that I feel, because of the system we've been living in, we don't even have time to stop. When we stop, and I'm talking generally as a society, we're so tired, we just crash, you know, and go to sleep and Some of us cannot even sleep, right? There's a lot of people who can't sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
Their minds will not stop. And this is a form of enslavement, too. We worry so much. We've been living in a world that requires so much impossible, so many impossible things to have to resolve or live from. If you really live in the system with house insurance, car insurance, mortgage, you name it. Like, you have, you know, most people do not live off their gardens. They're not eating from the fruit trees. They're going shopping and markets and, you know, it's constantly having to generate more money to pay for all those things that they think will keep them safe. And, you know, I was born in the system. I still live in the system. I have children, you know, and I'm inherently inserted in it. And navigating in the last, you know, 12 years of my life, 15 years of my life, trying to, you know, come to a place of completion with my responsibility, or I perceive as my responsibility as a mother, and, you know, and walking away from more and more from the system as I can, and creating, and I think that's where we're going with sustainability, gardening, and free energy systems like solar power, wind power, little by little. And it's not going to be something we can do overnight, because it would create a lot of suffering as well. Even if we come out of, you know, if we came out of the system abruptly, it would be absolute chaos in the world. And it could be that we're going to come out of it very, very, very slowly. And could be that there will be a catastrophe that will decrease the population. Who is to know what's written and if there is anything written? It's something, to me, things change from moment to moment. It's like, you know, I have friends and some of them believe that we're doomed, and no matter what, and they're extremely smart, intelligent people. They've watched every science doc there is, and they subscribe to scientific journals, and they are convinced that with what we have now and what we know, that we're doomed. We're literally, the Earth is doomed. We will not survive, and humanity will perish. There's no way around it. And I believe every morning when I wake up, I'll get a news from another source that will say, oh, this was just created, that will completely resolve this problem we had. And sometimes, and I believe a lot of times, and here's the paradox again, the poison is the medicine. So how many antidotes are created from the poison from which causes the intoxication or the disease? And science has been a poison in so many ways. And from science, we may discover the cure to a lot of things. If we just start to move science into a direction that actually is harmonious with nature, in the sense that it's to preserve nature. Because nature, you know, why wouldn't nature help itself? I think the pathways will be so much easier to find solutions when we just turn around and start looking in the other direction. Instead of working, usurping nature, you know, reaping the earth for its resources, metabolizing to work against it. How about we start thinking sustainability, and we use the knowledge we have to work with nature, to help nature? I think we're going to have geometrical exponential progress.
Yeah.
That's much faster.
I often use the analogy with folks who want to keep doing things the way that we've been doing it for centuries. Okay, all right, go ahead and set aside the science. You know, forget about the science, all right? We're not going to talk about the science. based upon your position as the science is flawed and so forth, and it doesn't really matter, man does not have any impact, I'm coming over to your house with all my garbage and I'm going to dump it in your living room. Because you say it doesn't matter. So if I dump my garbage in your living room, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. And I'm not going to dump my garbage in your living room. And we need to stop dumping our garbage where we live and where we eat and where we sleep and where we play and where we work. Because it's the right thing to do. Forget about the science. Because it's the right thing to do. And I think that you know, that kind of shuts down that whole scientific argument. It's just ridiculous at one point to continue to argue. I remember years ago when I was working for a Christian radio station back in the 80s, and I made the decision after doing several interviews on a particular subject that I would never, ever do another interview on that subject again. And I haven't, because neither side has moved from their position on that subject. So, until I can find a more salient argument, that paradox, I can't breach that. Kalyani, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. This has been a pleasure to have you on the program and also to listen to your beautiful voice and music that you've made available. It is available on Amazon, whether it is Inanna's Tears for Inanna or the Namu's Invocation. They're both available through Amazon, and you can go to her website as well and watch the videos. Beautiful, beautiful videos. My compliments to the videographer and how they put all that together. And also the experiences that you had just creating them. I mean, my goodness, the things that you were able to do in that regard. And I want to, first of all, extend it to you, though you are here in California, should you find yourself here in Santa Barbara in the near future, or anytime for that matter, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Wonderful. Well, it's been such a pleasure, Richard. Really, indeed. I really enjoyed our conversation very much.
And Kalyani.com is the website, KALYANI.com. And before we let you go, I have three final questions for you. You've probably answered these questions in some fashion throughout the interview, but I want to ask these questions of you directly, if you don't mind. And again, my thanks to you for giving us so much time here on the program. My first question to you is, who is Kalyani?
Oh, my. Oh, Richard, you're something. I think Kalyani is an expression of the God essence that's revealing itself in every moment. Kalyani is indefinable.
Okay. Next question is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, at the foundational level, I hope that my work will open people's hearts and bring them into their loving essence. And from there, just to be able to look at the world with renewed eyes, with a new vision, at the openness of new possibilities, and to heal themselves individually and collectively as we heal each other, ourselves individually, obviously, we'll heal everyone one at a time, collectively.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose, I feel, is to be a bridge, to merge, and to serve as a glue or a catalyst for the integration of our polarities in the planet. If I could serve in any way, I would say this is how I feel I'm here to serve. And again, above all, I'm here to serve, you know, the will of consciousness to, you know, to serve as an instrument to our evolution, to our progress, to our healing, in whatever way I may serve. And my understanding is so far that it feels I'm here to assist in the integration of our polarities and bringing harmony and balance.
Well, we greatly appreciate your sharing that with us and for sharing this hour with us. And we look forward to having you in studio one day soon. And if it's not in studio, on the phone once again to continue this conversation, because I think that what you have to share is very important, and we do appreciate your sharing it here on the program.
I'd love that, Richard, anytime.
Terrific. Well, again, it's kalyani.com, the website, Tears for Inanna and Namu's Invocation. Those are the pieces of music that you've heard here on the program. We thank you so much for joining us, and we encourage you to join us every week. Go to the website, richarddugan.com. We have the links to our guests, including today's guest, and we also thank you for joining us each broadcast. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.